CliffCentral.com. All right. Good morning, everybody. It is the Burning Platform. Time for us to check in on the big stories of the week. And we have a full house today. It looks like everybody's here, and we're very, very pleased about that. We got Pumi, we got Mighty Jamie, and I'm very pleased to welcome Dogozo, who's from the EFF. We haven't had the EFF in here for a while. In fact, we've been, I know Ryan's been trying to get you guys in here because it is your 10th year. Mm-hmm. I remember one of the, in fact, he was the first person I interviewed after we started Cliff Central was your commander in chief. Mm-hmm. And we've been interested to watch your journey as we've grown. You guys have grown. And obviously things are happening for the EFF. So it's very nice to see you. Pumelele, where do we want to begin today? Jamie, by the way, it's also good to have you here again because the last time you were here, you and Pumi had an argument about, I can't even remember what it was.
He's ungovernable. I can't believe we let him back in the door.
Ungovernable as he is, people like to hear from him. And he says some sensible things, Pumi. So you've got to acknowledge that at least we like having people in here with contrary opinions to our own. But I do remember the last time you two had a proper argument, and it was fantastic. I love an argument.
You know why I am so excited to have you here? Is because of the birthday celebrations.
Of course.
And because of the press conference that Julius had a couple of weeks ago. Mm. Are you here to name and shame all of those people that did not get the buses together?
I'm here to talk about the celebration. It's the biggest celebration that South Africa will ever see. I mean, it's the first time we see a political party that have started from the beginning and now where we are. I mean, you had other political parties that have failed, like Ahang, COPE. The fact that EFF is turning 10 is one of the biggest achievements, I think, in the history of South Africa.
But I think it's important to have a conversation, particularly about that celebration, because we didn't know what was tasked, what all the people were tasked with until Julius had the press conference to tell us that there was a directive put out and that the people did not meet the requirements and that he is the one that said they would be named and shamed. I've been patiently waiting to see
what did these people not do or do? I'm confused.
Okay.
Is this for the celebrations itself?
Yes, it is particularly for the celebrations.
Service providers who did not deliver. Who? I don't understand.
The commissars who did not deliver.
Okay, before we come there, you see, we must talk about the celebration in totality. You know, we must be able to explain to the people that EFF is turning 10. We're going to be having the celebration of the poor on the 29th of July, 2023. But, and that's going to be at the FNB Stadium.
When you have a celebration for the poor, what do you put on there?
It's a celebration for the poor. Well, we're just going to be having the biggest time of our life, and it's been a build-up by the way.
Okay, but like, what do we, who qualifies as the poor?
Everybody.
Can anybody come?
What if a
powerful cigarette magnate arrives there and says he's among the poor? Do you keep him in there as well?
All South Africans are invited to come and celebrate the 10 years of unbroken struggle that the EFF have delivered to the people of South Africa.
All right.
Yes.
We'll perhaps get onto this a little bit later on because I know Pumi has lots to ask you about this. But Dogozo, I just want to ask you, as a member of Parliament, how's Parliament doing? Because you guys still haven't moved back into your building. Parliament's a disaster. We haven't had an MP in here for a long time. Mm. And it seems to me like you've just settled into the Cape Town City Hall like forever now. I mean, is there anything being done there? Have they updated you? Have Public Works come to you guys and said, hey, by the way, you can resume your offices there. We can carry on with sessions of Parliament from there. Or is it a disaster?
It is a disaster because since they cordoned it off, nothing has happened. I mean, we do go there and as committees do sit. Other members do join via Zoom as well. But nothing has really been happening much. And that is why the EFF kept on calling that the Parliament should be moved to Pretoria. I mean, we've been calling for that for a longest time now to say, why don't we move Parliament to Pretoria. It's going to be cheaper, actually. You are going to have both Parliament there and you're going to have the departments as well there.
Yeah.
So it's going to just make sense if you just move Parliament to Pretoria. But you can tell that they don't want. They want us to keep on flying up and down.
Yeah, they like spending money. They like spending money.
You know, you keep MPs there, you know, housing for them, housing for ministers. They don't want to make sure that at least we would have cut a lot of money if we would have managed
I completely agree with you.
Push Parliament to...
You will find, Dogoza, during the course of this conversation, there are actually going to be many things you and I agree on.
Mm-hmm.
And the audience will be, there will be consternation about some of these things. But I'm with you on that. And I also think that there are too many people in the situation who are on the take, who have no interest in fixing things. I mean, now we just saw this disaster in Johannesburg, right? And I don't know which ward you represent or which who you're actually an MP for in terms of your constituency. But Johannesburg is now a toilet. And it's a cracked toilet. It's not even a good toilet anymore. And it's just embarrassing to me that we don't have a parliament that works. We don't have a our main city, the main economic hub, is now looks like a war zone. We know Etekwini's got huge problems with sewage flowing all over the place. During those riots and during the floods, people are still living in squalor there. So take our three biggest cities. There are horrible disasters in all three. All three of them look like shitholes, like Donald Trump called us ages ago. And I mean, this is just a horrible state of affairs to find ourselves in. I find it very difficult to be positive as a South African at the moment. So if your 10-year celebration gives people who support you and you guys a reason to celebrate, I'm all for it. Honestly, we're looking for reasons.
It does look very bad, but there is hope. And we always tell people that, you know, the only way that you can change the situation in this country is by voting the ANC out. And that's just that. South Africans need to come out in their numbers next year and they need to go and make sure that they vote and they do the correct thing and they vote for the EFF and make sure that they vote the ANC out. Because as long as the ANC is still in power, you're still going to have such situations because the ANC does not care about anybody else except the ANC. They put themselves first. The cadres of the ANC put themselves forward and they put themselves first and they don't care about any other thing that happens in this country except what's in for them. And that is one of the biggest challenges that we're facing right now.
Dogozo, how do you then reconcile that statement and that stance with what we have seen in the municipalities like in Johannesburg, like in Ekurhuleni, where the EFF have then aligned themselves with the ANC? How do you reconcile those two things? So you say to people they must vote the ANC out, and if they do vote for you, you use those votes to align with the ANC.
Okay, maybe let me correct this because I know a lot of it's been marriages. People have to say coalitions and alignments. We're not aligned to anybody. We made a decision as the Central Command Team that we're going to now participate in government so that South Africans can be able to see how we govern. And I'm sure you have seen that where we have taken MMCs, we have actually been doing quite well. Take, for example, in Johannesburg, the health department. You have now come to see that we have clinics that are opening now 24 hours. We're making sure that everything functions and is properly functioning well.
But that didn't happen in the last 18 months.
No, it is happening right now.
No, but what I'm saying is, for instance, the clinic in Alexander has been opening late since, I think, 2018, before that. So it's not the function of the MMC being an EFF member that's now
not
the
only,
clinics open
not
that
only
way.
Do you find that clinics were open, but you find that clinics were open, but there was actually no staff and there was no medicine. So we are making sure that everything within the clinics are now functioning and are functioning properly. You know, we had another little incident, which was amazing, where you find that the generator hasn't been working. It was just a simple matter of maintenance. It nothing was needed, which was major. It was just a maintenance issue.
I just want to like caution, and of course, you know, everyone here is allowed to ask whatever questions they want, but I do think it's worth us looking at the bigger picture today because we don't really have an opportunity too often to have the EFF in here, just like we had the ANC Youth League the other day and we all piled on about all the ANC issues. While I think that there are lots of things that we will disagree about, and I'm sure Jamie's got some questions for you too, I do think Pumi's point's relevant. It's like, what kinds of coalitions, because you guys aren't going to outright become the government. There's no possibility of that in 2024, even though you probably have dreams of that coming to materialize. Who would you be prepared to sit down and talk to? Because Julius made some comments about this just this week.
Yeah, with the Moonshot Pact.
Yeah. And he said, we're prepared to talk to anyone. If they don't want to talk to us, fine. That sounds to me like a sensible approach, because you should in politics be able to compromise in an effort to try and bring about the right kinds of changes. Do you want to comment on that and say who you think isn't a potential partner?
Don't get it, let me tell you. We have always been open. And I can take you back to 2016, the local government elections, where we sent out as the central command team a delegation to actually go and speak to everybody to say, this is our demands that we wanted, as the EFF. And then anybody who will then at least meet us halfway, we were willing to work with them. We have always put the people first and not ourselves. And it was a serious thing that we entered, because we decided not to take government in 2016 at all. We could have participated in it, but we decided not to, because we knew at that particular time that we're not ready as the organization. But now we are, and that is why we are now participating in government. So, right. You know, the moon pack shot. You know that one. You know, it's fine. Let them go in August and do whatever that they want to do and speak about whatever that they want to speak about. Obviously, they are allowed to. But it puzzles me what type of a political party that can want to go to the election already thinking that they're going to lose that election. We are working very hard as the organization. I mean, last year we had a 1 million membership registration campaign that we had. Now we have a 5 million where we are registering new members, like new people in the IEC to make sure that we have our own voters.
For context, because I know Jamie's got lots of questions he wants to ask you, but just give us a little bit of a story about how you got involved in the EFF and your own
background.
Yeah, your own background.
Me, myself.
Yeah. Let's talk about you for a second. I mean, it's not going to.
Well, maybe as we celebrate the 10 years, everybody has their story to tell.
We want to hear yours.
Well, I joined the EFF in 2013. I think I was one of the fortunate ones because I've managed to serve in the branch. I've served in the provincial level, and now I'm in the national level. So it's one of those where you understand properly what has been happening and who we are as the organization. 2013 was a very beautiful year indeed. A lot of people thought that we're never going to make it. But here we are now, we have made it. So one of the reasons that I joined the EFF is the language that the EFF was speaking about, socialism. And they were also speaking about putting the dignity of a black person up front. You know, they were fighting for a lot of things, including trying to make sure that we correct what have happened in the past. But above everything else was to make sure that South Africa has a future. And if you have realized what happened in 2013 is that a lot of people who joined the EFF were not politicians. Literally, a lot of people who joined the EFF were people who were just tired of the status quo of what was happening in this country, and they needed a change. And I think maybe that is one of the reasons we have survived the way that we have survived, because it was not people who say, I want to be a member of parliament or I want to be a councillor. It was literally people who just said, I want a change and I'm going to give my ultimate best to make sure that I give my 2 cents or my 5 cents or my 10 cents to make sure that we can change the status quo in this country. So, okay. Yeah. So right. I joined in 2013 and it's been wonderful ever since.
So you pretty much were like a founder member then. All right. Yeah, that's interesting. All right. So Jamie, you've been very seriously taking notes. Go ahead. You want to put some questions to Ntokozo?
Well, I mean, I don't have questions so much as comments about this, coalition, the moonshot one as a starting point.
All right.
Because I think everyone is thinking about coalitions because they are a factor. They're frustrating everybody and everyone's trying to figure out how do we navigate this space. And I think your question about everyone making some kind of deal with the ANC at some level, but then saying that they want to go against the ANC confuses the electorate. And when I think about the moonshot, what confused me about the way the DA set up their conversation was that they came out and said, we've got two enemies, the ANC and the EFF. I thought, okay, this is a bit strange because everyone's frustrated with the ANC. Why are you also picking a second enemy when you could have just come and said, we need to get the ANC out of government? And we need to do so in the most strategic manner possible. So if you've got a party that is polling between 10 and 13%, depending on what poll you look at, why would you want to exclude them from the conversation from the jump? I thought that was confusing. I thought those terms of reference for a starting conversation were wrong. And maybe that's why John shouldn't have been the person to lead this conversation. I think this should have been led actually by a retired politician, somebody who's not active in the game.
Problem is none of them bloody retire.
That's a challenge. Maybe like
they all stick around for far too long.
For instance,
someone should talk to Bantu Olomisa seriously and say to him, Tate, it's time. And Mosiwa Lekota. I mean, someone's going to talk to them, right?
Don't be that person. Okay. Janene is serving.
So let me stick to the main point. So let's assume we could get the gift of the giver's leader to convene a conversation.
Because he's done more public service than anyone in government.
And he's a neutral guy, right? So everyone respects him. If we had that kind of an umbrella, I think you could have people coming in and having a conversation about what does a government look like under a coalition of, you know, different political parties with different ideologies, but who are trying to serve a South Africa that is genuinely frustrated with the way the cities are looking, the way the country's looking. That is something that I think could have worked more than this particular moonshot type of framework. The reason why I'm making this comment is it's so difficult. If you look at Turkey, it's so difficult to beat incumbents.
Mm-hmm.
And they're difficult to beat,
especially when they're crooked like Erdogan.
Yeah. But if you were to think that Erdogan is a bit crooked, wouldn't that same argument extend to the ANC?
Oh, they're all crooked.
So and if you look at the way
I'm not going to get into socialism when it's got like 200 million dead bodies piled up in its name.
Okay. I'm going to come back to you right now, Garrett, but before I come that, I need to explain because I don't want this to be left unexplained.
Sure, Jamie's question. Yes. Jamie's comment.
Yes. Yeah. The EFF has never been in coalition with anybody. That I want people to understand. But what have happened was that, you know, I know when you say to us, it doesn't make sense. Why at the beginning? You see, at the beginning, we were strategic about what we're doing. We decided to take away the governance away from the ANC within the municipalities because that's what they were using to eat, to make sure that we weaken the ANC. Because honestly speaking, our opponent is not the DA. DA, we're not even worried about the DA. Our opponent was the ANC, and we needed to make sure that we deal with the ANC first. So you took away those mayorship, you took away those MMCs. They could not steal, they could not do anything whatsoever. So it was a strategic move from the EFF to make sure that we deal with the elephant first, which is the ANC. And then once that was done, right, we are now coming to say we're satisfied with the position that we see where the ANC is. Everybody understands, and that's why you can even see the panic that is happening with this moonshot pack that is happening, because everybody understands that the ANC will not gain 50% next year. They will not make it to the 50%. And that is why us as the EFF, we have made sure that we are running our race. We're not in here with coalition. We are making sure that we are going to make sure that President Julius Malema becomes the president of the Republic of South Africa next year.
Okay, now come to my question about if he's the president of South Africa, what is this? What is still attractive about this philosophy that you guys on the left are still obsessed with years and years after it has proved to have failed everywhere else? And I don't want to be mean, but you don't control a single municipality in this country. You guys don't have any experience in government whatsoever. And the idea that you would not only come in and try to fix and maintain things, let me take you at your word and say that your intentions are pure and you want to make the country run better and you want to look after poor people and you want to do good things. Let me accept that that is true. And I'm not going to argue with that for all the people in the comments who are saying, but the EFF is this and that. I'm going to take you at your word. To implement then the most destructive system of the last 150 years, why would you do that?
You know, Garrett, the problem is that we live in the world where capitalism will always make sure that they win in the end of the day.
But it's just a free market. You know this. I mean, like, don't you and I want to be able to trade if you've got a nice EFF jersey that I want?
Let her finish her
thought. But we've got to define here, because capitalism is different to what I think the EFF can consider capitalism to be. So if I want your jersey, I'll pay you a fair price. If you don't want to accept my price, you don't have to give me your jersey. That's all free markets are.
Well, it depends on how you put – okay, let's then take it to the South African content of the world we're faced with right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we start by saying that we want expropriation of land without compensation for equal distribution in use. The reality is, in this country, we don't own anything. You know, our own country does not own anything on the basis that the land is not with us. You know, you can't do anything without the land. Let's start there.
But that's not a true statement. The state owns more land than any other entity.
No, it does not.
It absolutely does. You can look at the land registrations. You can go to the deeds office. You could see it.
It does not.
So where did you get that fact?
It does not.
You made it up.
The state does not.
Who does?
It's privately owned.
Most of this country is privately owned. That's absolutely not true.
It is privately owned. It is privately owned. And that's one of the biggest challenges that we're faced.
You're not telling me where you know that from.
I'm telling you, it is privately owned. It's not made up. Because if you, okay,
I have a question. I have a slightly different question, because we're not moving forward from this.
Right.
What are the top three policy priorities for the EFF? And explain it to me like I'm an 18-year-old, first-time voter.
Okay. The first one is expropriation of South African land without compensation for equal redistribution. And then the second
one... What does that mean? If I'm an 18-year-old,
okay,
what does that mean?
Okay, we want to make sure that the state owns the land. So that
because they've run everything else so well.
No. But you see, no, that's the ANC state. So don't say
right,
that.
Right. I'm not going to distract. Carry on.
This particular moment is owned by the ANC. Mm. So everything that people speak about, they speak about the ANC and not us. So the first thing that we want expropriation of land. The state must be the custodian.
Everyone's land will be taken away and then redistributed.
Yeah. So what does that mean? Does that mean nobody owns a house? Nobody owns their land? It is all owned by the country?
Yeah, how do
we
do
that
practically?
Via the EFF decide who gets to do what?
You apply. You make an application.
What it means? Yes. First answer my question with yes or
no. So this is what's going to happen. Now the land is in the custodian of the state, right?
So all those people who paid for their properties or who have most of their wealth in their properties, it's all gone.
Let me explain, Karen.
Mm.
Now, I am, for example, we have a lot of land that is just sitting around that's not doing anything. You have people who will tell you, I'm having a farm, don't. And then when you go there, you find that there's only one ostrich there. There's land. There is a lot of things that we could use building industries within this country, but we cannot do it on the basis that we don't have land.
Okay, but
people don't have a place.
You're talking about the leftover land. What about Pumi's house and my house and Jamie's house?
No, but
imagine we own. What happens to that? Because if you expropriate everything, what happens to the existing value of the economy? And especially, what happens if the bank is owed more than the property's worth? Does the EFF and the state then take on the debt as well? What happens?
You know, Garrett, what have happened is that when we started, or when we begin to start about the expropriation bill, what happened was that you saw how the land was just, the prices just went very high, like in South Africa. All of a sudden, the people who owns the land in this country started even rebonding those, taking money against those, so that they can make sure that the situation becomes very difficult in terms when the time comes for us.
Let's just go back to expropriation. How is expropriation going to work? I think this is because we've never had this explained to us properly.
This is why I insist that you explain it to me as you would to a new voter. Because these are the people you want to give you the mandate. So what I want to understand is who gets what and who is in charge of making sure that happens?
Okay, so the EFF approach on the land expropriation without compensation is that all the land should be transferred to the ownership and custodianship of the state, right? With how it was done with the minerals and petroleum resource, where everything was transferred to the state. If you need to go and apply for a mine, you go to the state and you apply for it, and then
that's fine with a mine, but are we going to empty people from their houses, put them in the CBD, which is cracked, and then decide by this application process who gets to go back into their houses? I mean, why would anyone tolerate that? Yeah. The poor or the rich? Why would anyone put up with that? Yeah, what's the upshot? So now even if this could possibly work, and I know you can't explain a way for it to work because there's just no way. Mm. If it did, in your dream scenario, the EFF has this fantasy world where this could happen. Now you've distributed the land equally to everybody. What now?
Okay.
Because they don't own it, so there's no reason for that, because the state owns it.
Okay, so state custodianship, right, of the land. It means that those who currently occupy the land should apply for licenses and continue using the land, and should clearly state in the application of what they want to do with the land. Like, for example, you will be able to. It's just that Gareth wants to simplify this thing to a house. We're not speaking about
but
your
most
house.
People live, most so people do not live in rural areas looking to farm.
I'm not asking to simplify it to a house. Mm. I just want it, like Jamie said earlier, that it confuses the electorate, right? So what we are talking about, and that's why I specifically said, explain it like you would to an 18-year-old, right, is what I would like to understand is what it is that you stand for. So when you say land, there are many people in this country who live in rural areas who will leave the land and live in a mkuku just outside Johannesburg, because that land to them does not offer opportunity or value. They would rather come to Joburg and look for a job. So, and for me, this is one of the reasons why the EFF struggles to get voters outside of metropolitan areas, right? Because we don't understand what it is that you are talking about.
Okay.
But okay, so we're not going to move from this. You are unable to explain it to us, and I accept that. What is your second priority?
But I've explained it, but it's okay.
Well, that's all right.
Yeah, but we don't understand what you're saying.
We've chosen to move on. So what's the second
one? The nationalization of mines, banks, and other strategic sectors of the economy. So that is seriously critical, because we live in the world where we don't, the state does not own, or South Africans don't own their own mines. And therefore, a person comes from outside and they can do whatever they want. They can mine. They even don't even want to pay the taxes, which they should be paying. And that's where you get those illicit flows that comes into play. So we want to make sure that the nationalization of mine banks and other strategic sectors of the economy are done, building a state and governance capacity which will lead to the abolishment of the tenders. We also want free quality education, healthcare, houses, and sanitation for all. We want massive protected industrial development to create millions of sustainable jobs in this country.
How do you create jobs?
You create jobs firstly by making sure that you stabilize your issue of energy. Let's start there first.
But why would people work in this EFF utopia? Because you can't own your house. You can't own things. You can't go anywhere. Why would you work? Why would anyone work?
Garrett, everybody is going to work. Because
why?
Everybody's going
but
to
explain
get a
why.
Good job.
What job? Who's the state can employ everybody?
No, the state is not going to employ everybody.
So what?
But,
who would want to run?
But
who, like, where would you borrow money to start your business in the EFF utopia if the bank belongs to the EFF or to the government?
No, it doesn't.
Why would the government? The government doesn't lend people money.
Okay.
In any country.
No, but it can. If we wanted to design it that way,
what?
It can.
Where are you going to get taxes state- from if you take away people's businesses and houses, and you take away the banks and you take away the mines? Where's tax money going to come from? Where's the government going to be able to fund itself?
No, we're not taking
like
away
basic
people's
questions.
Base. We're not taking away people's businesses. We're simply saying that we must have a state bank. We're not saying that other banks must no longer exist, but we're saying that
no,
we
you
must
said
have,
you're going to take over the banks.
We must have
you didn't
a
say,
state
No, you
bank.
Said, I'm just going to quote you here, you said we will take over strategic things like the banks.
Yes.
So that means the other banks won't exist. the government will take over.
They're allowed
banks.
To exist. No one is saying that.
Why would they want to compete with a state bank when you'll give the state bank preferential regulatory capacities and the ability to make
but
its own
But why
rules?
Not? Because the state bank is actually going to assist our people. People will pay less
I also have a question around our people, that particular phrase. Who is excluded from our people? When you say our people, who is excluded?
The white monopoly capital.
Who is that? What does that look like? White monopoly capital is who?
The white monopoly capital is the people who are in charge of production in this country.
Who are those people?
My people. When I say our people, Garrett is my people. You're my people. Of course you're our people. You don't own the means of production. You are just a normal South African citizen who's making sure that
But I own the means of production here, producing this podcast.
No.
That could, under your definition, you could take that away.
No,
You could call me white monopoly capital.
No, Garrett, no. No.
So who is? Just the very rich ones?
Yes, Oppenheimers.
Okay.
And your Rothschilds.
So it's a wealth grab. This is just a wealth grab. This sounds like when a child sees another child has stuff and they just take it from them.
Banks, mines, property, businesses.
That's what it sounds like.
Let's be charitable to them a little bit because I feel like Garrett has strawmanned some of the arguments.
Okay, then you help them. Go on.
So I think the land conversation, just to go first to the question around what land reasonably do socialists speak about, right? You're talking about mining land. You're talking about farmland and agricultural holdings, right? And when you look at the land audit, what it showed there is that 97% of farms and agricultural holdings are owned by 7% of
Would be in almost every country in the world. Sure.
But when you then consider the historical context.
Because farming is hard, by the way. I mean, that's why. That's why 7% of the people have to farm the land to get the maximum production out of it so we can eat.
You know what?
But okay.
In a general conversation about markets and free markets and social markets, etc., that premise would be, you know, debatable without adding additional context. But here, we have to remember that a lot of this farmland was dispossessed violently under a creation of a set of laws which discriminated on race.
But you've got to prove that on a case by case basis. We can't make a generalization. Some people have paid in the last 10 years for a farm.
Holistically, and you're not wrong about that, which is what makes history a complex subject.
Yeah, so we can't.
We're all living in a continuation of a historical spectrum. You know, as much as you could have bought let's say a vineyard in Stellenbosch, legitimately.
Most of those belong to foreigners. What would you do about those? Those must be expropriated as well, right?
But
is that a thing? Foreigners can't own land, surely, under the EFFs.
The land must be owned by the state.
There we go.
But you get what I'm saying, right? I'm not talking about some of the additional dynamics. I'm talking about when you look at the land ownership patterns in South Africa, seem to most people unjust.
You said I'm strawmanning her argument. She's just said again, and I'm going to take her at her word. I believe her. I take her seriously. She says all the land will belong to the state. So why are you arguing for something
I'm contextualizing what I think is the fair terrain
around. Are you mansplaining her?
No. I think when we, and I'm not talking about the banks or whatever, I think the land conversation.
It's important. It's important to understand because as a member of the working committees, is it working committee or war room? Which one is it again?
Please remind
me.
War
council, right? I think she has a thorough grasp of what it is that the policy is. And her argument is that all the land. That is what you're. Saying.
What
and
I'm
what you are saying is you are then saying you feel a need to clarify what she is saying.
No. I'm clarifying what I think Gareth has done, which is so I'm Gareth-splaining, if anything. Because Gareth said, what is the land ownership pattern in South Africa? And he said that the state owns most of the land. And,
and then
what
you redefine
the land audit says.
Yes, but agricultural land. But there is so much land in this country that is not agricultural land, that's zoned for military, that's zoned for public works, that is now being incorporated into townships and suburbs around Johannesburg and Pretoria and all these places that are growing, that is government land. It's obviously owned by the state. And if you do a proper land audit of all the land, not just the agricultural land, you'll see that that is in fact the case.
When we're talking about land in the context of a South African political conversation, right, there are three types of land that we're talking about, right? It's some land is not
arable
and it's not hospitable,
right? We're talking about all land. Dogozo said all land, so I don't know why we're breaking it down.
I just thought it was a little bit of a straw man.
Not at all.
Because it's mining land.
I think I've been clear. Farming land. Both Dogozo and I are quite clear. Like, we mean all land, right? We mean all land, you and I, in this discussion. There we go.
But your focus of the conversation.
I told you you'd find it funny how much I agree with the EFF on some
things. This is the straw man. The straw man I'm pointing out is some of your arguments about residential land, like your house, right, doesn't necessarily apply to farmland, which was...
But you're complicating a quite simple issue. She said all land.
So now, I think there's a straw man somewhere.
Let's go back to her question. Three things. So the first one was the land. The second one was the strategic resources and minerals and the bank, nationalize all of that stuff. And the third one was...
The third one is building state and government capacity.
Okay.
Which will lead to the abolishment of tenders.
Now, no one would be against that. But that isn't number one. That's number three. When people have researched, and Jamie can back me up on this, because I know you look at these surveys and you take them seriously and you probably interpret them with more time and effort than I do, so I'm willing to be corrected, but the land does not come up as a priority for the majority of South Africans.
Well, you know what?
It's not even in the top 10 as far as I've seen.
What I've come to find is that there's a bit of a disconnect, right, between some of the official polling data and some of the discourse on the ground. So when I look at the polls, right, Ipsos, Social Research Foundation, several others, land doesn't show up.
Yeah.
But oftentimes when I am in either I'm social listening or I've just been living life, braais, et cetera, in black communities, that is something that I often hear about a lot. For instance, at my university where I studied, that was a big talking point amongst the students. And that may be a generational thing.
Yeah.
But I've often found that there's a bit of a disconnect between what I hear on the ground sometimes and what the polling indicates. And as we know, American and European elections, polling isn't always accurate, especially
Absolutely.
When you're
Couldn't
polling
agree more.
People.
But then let's be careful not to say like among black people, because again, there's huge differences between X people like MPs or cabinet ministers, when they have a braai, they're not talking
of
about
course,
anything
and,
but themselves.
And I can't give you outside and, of that.
No, of course. But I mean, when you say you certainly can't say like black people think X or Y, which would be hugely insulting, and we don't have to go down that
path. It depends. So
you're saying that maybe these polls are skewed and that they don't know black people.
I'm saying that there are two types of generalizations.
Yeah.
One is a hasty generalization, one that is not founded on any scientific basis whatsoever. And then there's a statistical generalization, which can be founded on proper research, listening, et cetera, et cetera. So what I'm saying to you is I've tried to reconcile the gap between
what
the polling has indicated and what the land discourse sometimes is on social media platforms, et cetera.
And you think it's probably more important than those surveys show?
Yes.
Okay.
So I think that in the dispossessed communities where people don't have land ownership of land, which are predominantly black, it is a bigger issue than, for instance, the DA would think
so
it is.
So then that would be great news for the EFF.
I think that's why they have 10%.
That would mean that they have their finger on the pulse of what most people in this country are actually concerned with, and maybe their three priorities are the three priorities. What do you say, Pumi?
We have seven, actually.
Seven? Oh, there's some more.
Yeah.
Okay, so after number three, which is like...
We have three: quality education, healthcare, houses, and sanitation.
Who's paying for that? Because we can't even get the NIH off the ground. I mean, none of our government hospitals work.
You see, the problem is...
I'm just taking health.
Again, looking at the eye of the country, which is run by the ANC.
I understand. But where would the EFF do better? How would you do better? How would you appoint people like in a better way than the ANC have?
Okay.
They would be cadres, but there would be EFF cadres.
No.
How would it work?
You know what we... Okay. You know, cadre deployment in the EFF... is actually not one of our things. We actually deploy people on basis of their strength. If tomorrow there is a skill that we do not have in-house, we'll go and fetch somebody. It doesn't mean that because you must be a member of the...
Where would you get doctors and nurses and hospital managers? Because those people aren't going to hang around if you take away their property.
Oh my God, Garrett, stop thinking about your house.
No, I'm not thinking about my...
As he's explaining to you, you are looking at people, this in a very small scale of looking at things.
Most people look at their budget every month.
Yes.
I mean, we're all normal people. None of us are supremely rich. None of us are supremely poor. We're all managing to eke out a living, right? And I take you as an MP. You're not on a huge salary. People always say MPs earn this huge amount of money. You don't, right? But all of us... We think about how much we have to spend every month. We think about what our priorities are. Having a roof over your head is a pretty big priority for most people. And I'm not simplifying this. Mm. I don't think I'm being unkind or straw-manning here.
Well, Jamie. You know what?
I mean, these are things that most people think about. You need transport. You need accommodation. You need food. After that, all the other stuff you can start figuring out. Am I right?
So, look, I don't support land expropriation without compensation, right? Because I think at the private property level of the house ownership, you have some issues. But I do think that there's a conversation that is important to have about land injustice in South Africa, because it seems to me cruel to insist on the current land ownership patterns when you have...
Is this because you think it's unequal and unfair?
I think, first and foremost, the way everyone got to most of their addresses is based on history, not necessarily just mere merit. You know, if you...
That's true for everything. It's true for how you get to school. It's how you get to your job.
Exactly. But
it's how you get healthcare. It's how you get everything.
So it's not... This is not a pure meritocratic outcome, is what I'm saying.
Of course not.
2023 is not a result of people who just started off from starting point.
But if the EFF had their way and the state redistributed all of that and started history again, you know, like they did in Stalinist Russia, would that be the same?
Well, this is... So I'm not going to make their point for them, right? That's why I'm saying that. When I look at the land distribution patterns in South Africa, there is a massive injustice and cruelty there, right? To insist upon
cruelty is a hell of a word. Explain that.
It's cruel for people who own a lot of land and have lived affluent lives, and some of that land ownership, especially if you look at
you said 7%. So 7% of the people in this country are cruel.
No, what I'm saying is insisting on the status quo. Which is to say, hey, let's say, for example, someone lives in Houghton or whatever, and they say, well, I'm in Houghton, I'm comfortable here. You must continue to be comfortable in Alex, and we don't have to have a conversation about the...
I don't think anyone thinks... Find me a person who would say that publicly.
So when
who
people...
Who would say that? Kind of person would go around going... No, it's absolutely fine that there are people who live in absolute poverty. There's no one in any of the parties that I could think of. Can you, Dogozo? Is there anyone in the EFF, the DA, the ANC who would go, yeah, it's fine for those poor people?
So we all agree that land needs to be the land question needs to be resolved one way or another, right? In terms of the conversation we have outside of the nationalization one. Mm-hmm. So in this room, we agree. Then the question then becomes, what then do you do? Because when it gets personal, right, when you then say, let's put affordable housing in Seapoint, then people say, well, I don't want affordable housing in my neighborhood because that's going to depreciate the value of my property. Mm. Then that's when you start to hear the little cruelty there. Because
it's not cruelty. That's just
what do you do?
Why are black people moving into suburbs that were 80% white and they're happy to do so by their own free will? You can't say that those people are making decisions about property values and being cruel. They want their kids to grow up in a nice neighborhood.
So at an individual level, your argument is solid. No question about it. Everyone wants to live in the best.
But you must look at everything on an individual level.
You
and Pumi and I are making policy. Dogozo is, and she's told us her policy.
I would disagree with somebody who makes that liberal argument that everything needs to be looked at an individual level, because some things are social and some things are community-based, right? And if you only look at your safety in your neighborhood as Gareth, you may not live in a very safe neighborhood, because sometimes you have to collaborate on safety, and that's why we have all of these safety companies and interventions and gated communities, etc.
More private security than we have police.
But I think that we are
currently stuck in a quagmire around this issue of land and what the meanings of all of those things are. And I think we're missing the opportunity with having Ntokozo here of really digging deep into the mind of this organization and understanding. And I suppose, Ntokozo, and this is why for me, I keep asking the question to say, explain it to me until I understand it, as if you were talking to an 18-year-old. And the reason I make that particular request is because if you think about who the voters are, these are the people who are supposed to give you the mandate. But if you are not able to engage them and explain to them, then that's why they don't show up to vote.
You know, people don't show up to vote not because we're not explaining. People are not showing up to vote because they're just simply tired of the status quo which has been happening in this country. And we are honestly calling on them to make sure that next year they come up in their numbers and they go
in. Sorry, you're going to have to say that again for me because I was distracted by something falling behind me.
Sorry, folks. It's falling apart.
I thought it was falling on me.
We lost our internet now. Things are falling on
food. Really Ntokozo,
I promise you, next time we'll have a much nicer welcome.
I know. It's like there are people who don't want us to be here the way things are happening.
Well, trust me, I want you to be here.
We want you to be here.
Answer Pumi's question, though, about the 18-year-old. Why people aren't going to vote? Because that is an important question that all of you must have thought about.
We have, actually. When you look at the last election, the voter turnout was concerning, I think, across all political parties. We were concerned about the lower voter turnout because in the end of the day, if people don't come out and vote, they're going to lose trust in the system itself. And if people can lose the system of saying, if I vote, change will come, if people can lose that, we'll then might have to face an unled revolution, which is the most dangerous thing that any country can face. So it is, I think people have just lost hope because young people are not getting jobs. I mean, you all know what we're faced with. You know, you go to a hospital, you will stay there the whole day. You might not even get anything except Panado. You might not get the help you need. Education is in tatters. You know, everything is just literally very bad. And I think maybe our people no longer have hope. And that is why in the EFF we're saying 2024 is our 1994. If we are not going to do what our parents did in 1994, we might find ourselves in a hole that it might be very difficult for the country to get out of. I mean, we're owing everybody.
You know, I'm so glad you brought it up. 2024 is our 1994. Firstly, because the first time I heard that slogan was with Rise Mzansi. And so I wondered if this is a conversation you are having with them, because when they launched, that was their big launch slogan, right? And so I wondered if you are having the conversation with them and that's why you now have the same slogan.
No, they took it from us. We're not having any conversation with anybody. They can rise wherever they want. We don't have
So why are you using their slogan? But anyway.
No, they took it from us.
That's fine.
Because, you know, it is, I mean, next year is going to be a biggest decider. And that's why you can see panic everywhere, other political parties panicking, because it is now clear that the ANC is going to decline. It's a matter now of making sure that people go out and vote. And we need to go back and teach our people that their vote is important. And I understand, I mean, for 30 years you've been voting and nothing changes. You still live in the same poverty cycle that your parents were living under. So it is critical for people to understand how important their votes are. And then a vote can bring a change. I mean, South Africa does not start and end with the ANC. There are options in this country. And then they must go and just make sure that they vote correctly and they vote for the organization that is going to push South Africa forward.
So you raise the fact that you think that the reason people don't show up to vote is because they are losing hope. Mm-hmm. And given all of that you have told us now, do you think any of that gives hope? Because as I'm sitting here, having been listening to you, I'm more confused than before. But do you think it gives hope? Do you think that messaging is a hopeful message?
Does give hope to the people. I mean, since we came into existence, we have changed a lot. I mean, we've also raised a lot of issues as well. I mean, the issue of education, the issue of, you know, land, the issue of either you agree with it or not. The fact is that people in South Africa are speaking about it. People are talking about it. The issue of free education, people are talking about it. The importance of a quality education, not just education, because that's another thing we're suffering from, where everybody will just take kids to university, but they don't study for the skills which are necessary.
And then they end up getting out of university and can't get a job.
Can't get a job. So all these things that we speak about, the free quality healthcare, is all the things that, you know, it gives hope tomorrow. We have medical aids. You know, your life, you may not even understand what happens when you go to a government hospital or when you go to a clinic where you go there, you stay for hours and you don't even get a proper check. You don't understand people who have passed away, like the incident that we've had when an ambulance have left a person on the side because the paramedics did not want to go up the stairs.
These are not new conversations. Mm. The conversation of land, for instance, was a PAC policy with Robert Sobukwe, who has long since died. So this is not a new conversation that you have added to the discourse. No, of South Africa.
Actually, it is, because I think
Robert Sobukwe wasn't talking about that.
Hear me correctly.
Okay.
What EFF has done, there have been issues in this country, and some of those issues, people may have talked about it, but a spotlight have never been shined on them. You know, a spotlight have never honestly been shined on them. I mean, Alex has been there for how many years, for crying out loud? And, you know, a lot of people may not, they are fine, they're okay with it to say, I'm staying in Sandton, and there's an Alex like it. What is the solution? People were never speaking about such issues. What is the solution to Alex? How
this
do we house our people?
Because people have been, they were banned books talking about the issue of Alexander. So this is not a new issue.
In artworks. There are artworks all over the world.
But we have put it, we have shined a serious light on it as the EFF.
You may think you have. And incorrectly so, because these conversations are conversations that have been happening even with our grandparents, and that's okay. My question, though, has not been answered around whether you feel this message that, for us at least in the room, we have talked about now for almost an hour, if it does the job of giving the hope that you think is what will make South Africans come and vote.
We give hope to South Africans. And I think, judging by the growth of the EFF, when others have died out, we have grew. So do we give hope? I guess the people have said it. We are giving hope to the people. And that is why today we are celebrating 10 years.
The full circle date, which is where we started this conversation, which may have sounded at the time like it was a flippant question, but it's, for me, a very serious question. When Julius Malema calls a press conference and says to everybody gathered and everybody that sees the message thereafter, there was a directive given to the leaders of this organization to organize round number 3,000 buses filled with the people who are their constituents. And they have only confirmed a third of that number. And I will hold them accountable by naming and shaming those people. And here we are 2 weeks later, and you're not willing to name and shame people who have not been able.
That's not fair for me.
I'm
not a spokesperson
to
of the
meet a commitment to the party. So they were unable to meet a commitment set by the leader of their party to their party. How can we believe that they will be able to meet a commitment that they are setting for the country when they can't be accountable and hold to that commitment for their own party?
I see the angle you're going with. Okay, maybe let's put it this way. Number one, maybe let me correct this. It is the organization that gives a directive. So the organization gave a directive to members of parliament, councillors, members of the legislature, that they must be able to bring their people, their constituencies, to the celebration. Because obviously we want to fill up FNB inside and out, you know. Yes, others may Many have complied and others may have not. And it may be certain things. We'll talk about it in War Council when we get the final report of those who did not comply. And probably they'll be asked to explain why they didn't comply. Obviously, a bus from Cape Town, you can imagine how much is it does it cost compared to a person who's in Johannesburg.
Maybe, so. Pumi, maybe just because we're running out of time on this, I don't want Jamie to have wasted his morning just coming to argue with me about land. So maybe, maybe
Jamie will come and argue with you about anything.
That's why we're thrilled to have it. But Ntokozo, I think maybe then it's fair for us to ask that you should maybe ask the CIC to stand by his word and to report back to us on who these bad people are in the organization and maybe fire them. So I mean, maybe you could just ask.
He said they would be held accountable. I hope he
fires them. I mean, we do hold each other accountable in the EFF.
Would you just ask him for us?
That's what makes us who we are. I mean, we don't play inside the organization.
Just tell him you were on this show and these people, these irritating people were asking you these really annoying questions. Yeah, demand the list.
Out of everything that you guys can ask for, you are busy asking for the list. You don't even want to
we want the list.
You're not even asking for VIP tickets. You're not even asking for tickets to the FMV. You don't even want to go to Uncle Tom and go and see our exhibition that has been running since the 7th until the 24th.
I am going to let Jamie have the closing word on this, but I am pleased you're here. You are always welcome here. So is Julius, so is Floyd, so is Buiseni, so is everybody, right? It's the first time we've met. We'll probably have many more conversations. I think that the EFF has got a number of problems. Pumi sketched a few of those problems. Jamie said that things are looking sunny for you because many people care about the things that you care about as a party. But let's keep talking because we're not going to get anywhere in this country. And that's why I do appreciate the fact that among all the things that he and I disagree about, your CIC says we've got to talk to each other.
Yes.
The parties must talk to each other. There's no one you can't make a concession to. There's no one you can't compromise with. Otherwise, you don't have a country. You've
that's
just got a bunch
politics.
Of people who hate each other. And that's stupid. So, Jamie, you get the closing word.
Okay, pressure. So I think that the EFF is going to grow in the next election. I do think that they do have a message that does resonate with a few people. And maybe that ceiling is 15% or whatever the number may be. But on top of that, I do think that the opposition parties are underestimating 2024 because of the current polling that's coming out. You know, there's a book I read in high school called I'll Marry When I Want by Ngugi wa Thiong'o. And in the end of that story, the old man wins. And Turkey is another example of how the old man can win. And I think the DA, the EFF, and a lot of people who are trying to stake, you know, land on the chessboard, so to speak, underestimating the power of incumbency and the collective experience of a political party which has been in existence for over 100 years. And if we are going to see a new government next year, these opposition parties will have to work a lot harder and will have to maybe do even what you're doing, talk with a little bit more good faith and goodwill to each other to actually do what Mpumi is suggesting, encourage young people to get interested in the next election, because it won't be 1994 if most of the population feels like it's a waste of time and everyone is squabbling.
Yeah. And the less of a mandate we give to any of these parties, I mean, it was what decided by about 11 million voters last time around. That's not even
18 million.
But that's such a tiny proportion of the total population of this country. You're telling me that the vast majority of South Africans have just given up? That's a very scary thought.
It is.
Very scary thought for everyone involved. The politicians and the rest of us. Okay, I'm afraid we're going to have to call this party to an end. But your party still continues.
Yes, we are continuing on the 29th of July. Please, everybody must come and join us.
Believe it or not, there are going to be EFF supporters in our audience who will come.
Yeah.
All right, thank you, Ntokozo. Thank you, Jamie. Pleasure. Thank you, Pumelele. We will see everybody again next week for the same thing in the Burning Platform. And I really appreciate the fact that there were so many comments that we couldn't get to. I'm sorry, guys. We will put those comments to the next EFF person who comes to speak to us, if it isn't Ntokozo. All right. And have a good day. We'll see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. Cheers, everybody. Bye-bye.